Honour to welcome someone whose suffering and experiences exemplify the assault on Muslims and the assault on human rights around the world right from the beginning of the war on terror. Will you please welcome Mozan Beg, the former Guantanamo detainee.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. It's happening again, isn't it? As we speak, the whole Islamophobia attack, the whole idea of Islam being diametrically opposed to the Western way of life is returning as we speak every single day in the media. It's relentless, it's wanton, and it doesn't stop. When I returned from Guantanamo Bay, I thought that perhaps that part of the ordeal, the part of being demonized, the part of being regarded as subhuman, had ended in the chambers of isolation units in Camp Echo, Guantanamo Bay. But unbeknownst to me, we had our own Guantanamo Bay here in the United Kingdom of Great Britain, Belmarsh, where people were held for 3 years without charge, without trial, without meaningful access to their families, and without knowing what crime it is that they had committed for which they were paying the ultimate price, the removal of their freedom. And since that time, one of the hardest things to be able to deal with coming back to Britain is this growing attitude of me and the people that I relate to or hail from have also in this country begun to become demonized in a way that never happened before. It was never my experience, other than growing up in the 70s and the 80s as being a second generation Asian or Muslim. Many of us, I suppose, particularly of different ethnic, black and minority backgrounds, have at some point in our lives been told, nigger, go home, packy, go home, go back to your own country. I remember that very clearly back in the 70s and the 80s. I remember the Nazi marches up and down the streets with the Sikh Heils, the right-hand salutes, calling for us to get out of the country and being beaten up by them. And there is a certain resonance today of that very same sentiment of Paki, go home. Ironically, for this Paki, he did go home. He went home because of all sorts of reasons, a search for an identity and so forth. But what happened is that they bombed his home. They bombed it to the smithereens, they invaded it. And then he evacuated, he ran with his family, and he went to another home. But they dragged him out there at gunpoint in the middle of the night with a gun to his head in front of his family and kids and took him to a place that is the most notorious prison on earth. Not the worst, but the most notorious. It's the place everybody loves to hate. And as a result of that, they dragged him back here again and into an atmosphere that he's forced to recognize as one which has complete disdain and disrespect for what he upholds. And this is what we continue to see. It's not just my own case. There are so many cases now that are documented and highlighted about people that are being held in detention without trial in this country, let alone the places where they want to intend to send them back to places like Algeria, into Egypt, into Libya, where there's an unwritten convention of torture, if not written in the constitution itself, that these people will get tortured. And these are the types of things that Britain, we expected, the Britain that I always knew, was the place that would welcome, openly welcome, people who are being persecuted. But Britain itself now is becoming one of the key players, is one of the key players that's involved in the oppression of people around the world, namely Iraq, namely Afghanistan, and by definition an extension in the places to which where they wish to extradite people without charge, without trial, in the knowledge that they will be tortured. And the idea and the attitudes that are being changed in this country, the sense of fair play that I always thought was what made me British. I'm not British because of this government. That isn't what makes me British. What makes me British is my experiences in this place, my knowledge of this place. And all of those things, those ideas, those intrinsic attitudes that I believed were part of this country are being completely eroded in the name of something that we don't even yet understand. Why is it that so many British soldiers are fighting and being killed in Iraq and Afghanistan? For what reason? Are they protecting this country? Are they really protecting this country in the way that they would have been protecting it against the Nazis? I think not. Not at all. And we're being completely and continuously lied to. And as a result of these lies, the proliferation of terrorism and acts of terrorism and hatred is going up and increasing every day as we speak. And one of the cases, I'm not going to speak to you for very long, but one case, please, I would urge you all to remember because it's going to keep recurring again and again. And it's the case of a man called Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, a Libyan man, whom the Americans had captured in the war on terror in Operation Enduring Freedom, another misnomer. And that is, this man was taken and held in Bagram in the same facility where I was. In fact, he sat in the same chair being tortured where I was. But they sent him to a place that was the master torture center in Cairo, Egypt, because they also threatened me with the same thing. And when they sent him there, they said that if you don't speak, we'll give you the untold tortures that you'll have to face. And from what I've learned, he faced things that included electrodes to the testicles, rape, beating, and falaka, a method by which they use the beating of the soles of the feet. This man then, as being a self-declared, supposedly member of Al-Qaeda, then said that he was working on obtaining weapons of mass destruction from Saddam Hussein. 3 years and hundreds of thousands of deaths later, we know that statement was a false statement, it was a fallacy, it was said under torture, and it was proved to be wrong and incorrect. But his statement was used by Colin Powell as one of the major justifications to create a link between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda and then have a reason, a justification to enter Iraq. The frightening thing for me, the truly frightening thing for me, wasn't the torture, because by that time for me, that had almost become a norm. The truly frightening thing for me, and with British complicity, I say this again, with British complicity, was that they could have taken me. In fact, they threatened very directly to take me to this torture center for me to be beaten and tortured. And then I could have said I was a member of Al-Qaeda, and I could have said I personally met with Saddam Hussein in order to obtain weapons of mass destruction for my organization. And they could have, as a result of that, quoted me as being a reliable or credible source in which they could enter Iraq and then kill hundreds of thousands of people and occupy a land and capture people around the world on my say-so. That was the truly frightening thing. And I know for a fact that British intelligence officers were there during the whole period in Bagram in which they brought people in to interrogation. Now, with this knowledge, with all of this happening, with the British intelligence services working with all of the other intelligence services, and I maintain that military intelligence is an oxymoron. You can't be military and intelligent at the same time. They've proven that to us so many times. They've proven that to us time and time again. And out of the few military people who do talk, who do have the guts to speak out, like General Dannett recently, nobody cares to listen. And we're imagining that Tony Blair now, just on Al Jazeera, has recently said that he accepts that the war in Iraq is a disaster. That's supposed to be some sort of major coup for the media, that Tony Blair, after so many years of killing and murder, has actually recognized that Iraq is a disaster. That itself is newsworthy, is ludicrous. What we fail to recognize, or are failing to recognize in this country, and is important for us to, and to keep the pressure on to the people in power, is that Iraq and Afghanistan are a direct result, a direct link has been established between what takes place there and what rebounds, what the ripple effects are from over there to over here. And the only person in the country who doesn't understand this or cares not to understand this is Mr. Blair himself. And his government, people in his government, are taking this position continuously as if to weld all of these issues together, that Islam is diametrically opposed to our way of life. It's a threat. It's the way in which it portrays itself, the way in which it deals with its women, the way in which it deals with all of the issues in relation to other religions and faiths or no faiths. It needs to be challenged and checked. The whole issue of the woman's dress now is one of the biggest ones that's facing the whole of Europe. But I have a simple answer, actually. When Jack Straw said that I have a problem communicating with women who wear the face veil, I would have simply asked him, does your colleague David Blunkett concur with you? Because I'm sure he doesn't have that same problem. And that's the problem, isn't it? He's too busy trying to look and judge by the cover rather than listen. Because if he was listening, they would have heard the screams and the shouts and demonstrations of the 2 million people that march on the streets against the war in this country, which I heard back in my cell in Guantanamo. And it was a Republican guard, a guard who was of a Republican persuasion, who actually informed me of this, of the marches on the streets of Great Britain, the streets that I knew so well. And it was the first time in my incarceration period that I had a ray of hope, that millions of people were marching on the streets that I knew so well against a war that they believed was unjust and wrong, and one that will be marked as one of the blackest pages in the history of the United States of America, but also in the history of this country. Thank you.